Gandhi. Could you get me the other Krishna book, please?
The book? All Sunday, going to hear the beginning of pastime of chapter 12 in the 10th canto, which is called the Killing of Bhagasura. Now, in the 11th chapter, it had been described how Krishna has moved from all the cowherd men and all of Gokul. He moved from Gokul to Vrindavan, and they crossed the Yamuna River, and they made a bridge. When they got to the Yamuna, everyone looked at the water, and especially Krishna looked at the Vrindavan forest reflected in the water of the Yamuna, and it was so effulgent and so beautiful. And the river Yamuna was full of lotuses, and there were beautiful banyan trees that stretched, some of them even the branches went to the other side of the Yamuna, from one side to the other. So when they arrived there, the bulls swam across the river. Actually, they spent the night there first, and then they decided to go the next morning. And then the bulls went across, the cowherd men made the bulls go across, and the bulls were very powerful, so they went across quite easily, because the Yamuna at that time was flowing very strongly. And then the mother cows and their calves, the older calves went across, and the mother cows, by the time they reached the other side, they are very tired. And the newly born calves went across. By the cowherd men took them and put them around their shoulders. Have you ever seen cowherd men do that? Did you ever see that? They take the little calves, the young calves, and they put them just over their shoulders, and they can hold them with their right hand. They have all four legs together so they don't fall off. And they hold them with their right hand, and they swim. I've never seen them swimming across carrying a calf like that. But they can do that, and then they can swim with one hand. And the mothers were in so much anxiety to see their baby calves going across the Yamuna in that way, and they were separated from them. And then they were using different reeds. I've seen different translations in the Gokul Champa of this, but the one that makes the most sense, in one translation, describes how they made a bridge out of the different reeds and grasses on the side. But then I saw another translation, one by Banaswami, describe that they tied the boats together. Now that makes more sense. And they made a bridge out of boats, and they tied the boats together with reeds so that everyone could go across. And I've seen them do that in Vrindavan. They tie boats together to make a bridge, and then they charge you money to get across. So Krishna and Balaram came across on some sort of a bridge, and then they were so excited, and they touched. Krishna and Balaram were so young at that time, they were just about Dhruva's age, actually. Even a little bit younger. And Krishna jumped off, and for the first time he touched the dust of the Vrindavan forest. And the Vrindavan forest was so happy, and Krishna was so happy, and Balaram was so happy. And they were just looking around and looking at the beautiful sights of the Vrindavan forest. So the reason why they had gone to Vrindavan is that Krishna, of course, the ultimate reason was that Krishna wanted, it was time for him to change from his boyhood pastime place of Gokul to Vrindavan, which is a very special forest, the most special forest. And so Krishna inspired Upananda, who is the older brother of Nanda Maharaj, with the idea. And the idea was that there are so many troubles in the Vrindavan forest, in the Gokul forest, because we've seen that the Putana came, and now the last thing that has happened, that Trinavarta came, and then the Shakatasura came, and there's been troubles one after another for these innocent boys. And they told Nanda Maharaj, you are sinless. You are so pure. So therefore, nothing bad could be happening to you due to your own purity. Even that is such a wonderful concept. Just the way of thinking that people, that bad things happen to us not because he did it or they did it or they made this happen to me, but it is due to the reactions of my past deeds that I'm getting this reaction. And if actually we can accept that the difficulties and the anxieties and the struggles we face in life are due to our karma, we are not innocent. The tendency of everyone is to think of themselves as innocent and then point to everyone else as bad or guilty. But this mentality is incorrect, because it is like in the prison. You ask the people in the prison, why are you here? And most of them will say, I'm innocent. I didn't do anything. The judge made me come here. It's all the judge's fault. But actually, we can say generally, the prisoners in the prison, they're there because they've broken the law in one way or another. So similarly, the reactions that we get, or the difficulties that we face in life, are due to previous breakings of the law, we could say, sinful activities or pop. So when a devotee recognizes that point, and he sees everything as Krishna's mercy. If a person can actually see like that and take closer shelter of Krishna, then most of the difficulty which comes from our mind, in fact all the difficulties basically come from our minds, our rascal minds, then that disappears. That we become eligible enter the kingdom of God just as the son naturally inherits the property of his father. It's natural. So similarly, we naturally inherit the kingdom of God. We become qualified to be with Krishna if we can just learn, remove the victim complex and just say, yes, this is something that's happening in Krishna by his, somehow see Krishna's mercy in it. So Upananda told Nanda that you are sinless, so all these difficulties occurring for your son, they can't have anything to do with some karma that you have. And your boy is he's the most beloved and he's the most pious, so it can't be anything to do with him. He's so wonderful. So it must be due to the place. There's something wrong with this place, so we shouldn't stay here anymore. He said that we are cowherd men. And the cows, naturally, by their stepping of their hooves and by their grazing, they naturally destroy every area that they're in after some time, because their hooves are very pointed. So let us move from here. Let us move, as Prabhupada told us, told me personally, if something is auspicious, do it immediately. And if something is inauspicious, put it off. So immediately, this was actually again the inspiration of Krishna, because he wanted to go move to Vrindavan. So immediately the cowherd men packed up everything. They packed up everything. And they put everything on huge carts. And there was and they left immediately, and it was so between the rattling of the wheels of the carts and the cows mooing and everyone and everything and the utensils and all the belongings on the carts shaking around, no one could even hear each other talking. And there was this, and there were so many cows. There was it was like the Ganga River, the Sweta Ganga. The cows were all white and beautiful, and there was just a long stream of cows that looked so beautiful, like the Ganga. And then, as we said, they arrived at the shore of the Yamuna, and Krishna saw the Yamuna there. Of course, he had seen the Yamuna from Gokul too, because it winds around Vrindavan. The shape is so interesting, the way that the Yamuna comes. It comes from this side, from the Bandiravan side. It comes around from Lakshmivan like this, like an S. And then it comes around to over here, and then it comes around to here. So this area in here is Vrindavan, especially in that it comes around from here, oops, comes here, here, oops, I went backwards, goes here, and then around here, something like that. So in there is Vrindavan, surrounded by the Yamuna, like that. So when they came to this side, they crossed here and walked here, and then they saw the Yamuna. Krishna had seen it before, because in Gokul, where he was on the that side of the river, he had seen it. And then they crossed over, and Krishna touched the Vrindavan forest for the first time. And even though they had left Vrindavan, Gokul, to stop the attack of so many demons very quickly, two demons attacked again, sent by Kamsa, and one was in the shape of a calf, and his name was Vatsasura. And it's interesting, wonderful pastime how Krishna arranged to kill Vatsasura. Kamsa was so terrible that he thought he wanted to kill Krishna, and he thought, who is dearest to Krishna? And he asked. And he found out the calves are dearest to Krishna. So he thought of his friend who had the ability to, who's a demon, but had the ability to turn himself into a calf, Vatsasura. So immediately he called Bhattasura and he sent him in the shape of a calf. And he was a demon though, but in the shape of a calf. And he went into the outskirts of the area of where the calves were grazing. And he was staring at Krishna with very crooked eyes. And he was trying to arrange it like Palumbasura. He stayed on the outskirts until Krishna trusts me. And then I will grab him and take him to Kamsa, kill him. So Krishna immediately said to Balaram, "Do you see that calf over there? Do you recognize him?" Balaram said, "No, I don't recognize him." Krishna said, "Look at his eyes. Look at how his eyes are hate-filled. And they're staring at us. I think he's a demon." Balaram said, "Yes, I think you're right." So Krishna started massaging. Krishna loved the calves so much, and the calves. It was a fact that Krishna loved the calves and the cows. But at this time, Krishna wasn't quite a cowherd boy. He was a calfherd boy. So Krishna used to, sometimes he would kiss the calves. And that would cause Mother Yasoda so much anxiety, actually. Krishna loved the calves. So he began massaging the legs of the calves, scratching their backs. And the calves were so happy because they loved Krishna so much. And actually, cows and calves are amazing. Of course, they're individuals and they have different temperaments, but they respond to the affection that they're given by the one taking care of them. They naturally take shelter of their master. The domestic animals, like the horses and the cows and the calves, and they like to be around humans. Even pigs like to be around humans, even though humans don't like to be around pigs. Although it was a fad a few years ago to have a pet pig instead of a pet dog. Did you know that? Not in India, but it was a fad in the West. Have a pet pig. Just imagine what your neighbors would say if you had a pig in your house, or if you had a dog in your house, but a pig? Because they figured pigs were more intelligent than dogs. But in any case, Krishna was massaging the legs of the calves and petting them. And he'd go to one, and the next one, and the next one, massage the legs. And the calf was in his Vatsasura. He was thinking, "Krishna, trust me. Now I'll have my chance." And Krishna was thinking, "This demon trusts me. Let's see." He thinks he's fooled me. And of course, Krishna's very difficult to fool. One could even say, we cannot fool Krishna. It's not possible. When you think that Krishna, you can't fool Krishna, he knows everyone's heart. We're doing our bhakti, we're doing our service, and our mind is thinking so many things. Krishna knows that. So therefore, the quality of sharana, of simplicity, is considered quite wonderful amongst the Vaishnavas. Simple-hearted. Not foolish, but simple-hearted. And actually, one of the results of upper-end offenses is that the heart becomes crooked. In other words, we're doing our service for one thing, serving for one thing, but actually have something else in mind. So in any case, Krishna went to Vatsasura, and instead of massaging him, he grabbed him by the legs. And he began to spin him around, because the demon had another form. He was a cheetah. He had another form. What was going on the inside was very different from going on the outside. Outside he was an innocent calf, on the inside he was a demon. And when he was in stress and difficulty, he was unable to maintain the difference between the outside and the inside. So even though we, as aspiring devotees, maybe have a difference on the inside and an outside, maybe we're not so good on the outside, but maybe we're not so good on the inside either. But in any case, under stress, the devotee, he surrenders more deeply, and he makes his inside maybe become a little more like his outside. In other words, he takes more deep shelter. But the demon, under that stress, instead of thinking, oh, I've been caught by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though I'm in disguise as someone dear to Krishna. Now let me become, he's so powerful, let me become someone dear to Krishna. Oh, Krishna, take shelter of me, because, let me take shelter of you, because the nature of Krishna is that no matter how one approaches him, if he takes shelter of him, and calls out his name even once, Krishna says, it is my promise that I will give him abhayam sakala tasmai. I will give him at all times and places. I will give him refuge. I will give him safety if he calls out my name. If he one time calls out, Krishna, I am yours. Even if he's a demon like Vatsasura, if he does that, Krishna will give him shelter. This is his promise. This is what Ramachandra said about Vibhishan. So Vatsasura, instead of taking deeper shelter and making his inside like his outside, he made his outside like his inside, and he assumed his original form, demonic form. And then, after spinning him around, then Krishna killed him by throwing him into a tree. A kapita tree, which means a rose apple tree. I don't know what that kind of tree is. But anyway, he killed him in that way. And he spun around first because he didn't want to be accused of killing a calf. So let everyone see of the actual nature of this form and nature of this asura. So this happened even after they moved from Gokul, and then later on in the place known as Kadiravan, which is quite close to Radhakund, then another demon attacked Krishna in the Kalabhorth. His name is Bakasura. He was a ferocious in the shape of a crane. He was ferocious, big beaks. Tried to kill Krishna, and immediately came out as big as a hill, tried to swallow Krishna up. And Krishna assumed a form that was fiery, and he was in the beak, the mouth of the demon, and he had to spit him out. And then he tried to peck him, and kill him in this way. Krishna just grabbed his beaks and split them apart, and as easily as a child can split apart a piece of grass, Krishna split apart the beaks of this person, of this demon Bakasura. And then all the boys, they were so thrilled, they had fainted, because the nature of the Brijbasis was that they only loved Krishna. There was no difference between their inside and outside. And when they saw Krishna in difficulty, they feared for his life. Even Balaram became stunned and fainted, because they thought, oh no, he's killed, he's eaten Krishna, swallowed Krishna. And that means they have no life left. This is what love actually means. Love for Krishna means that if one sees one's beloved in difficulty, there's no question of going somewhere else for shelter. This is not love if we can go somewhere else for shelter, because the heart is completely given. So the Vrijavasis, their heart was completely given to Krishna. So when they thought Krishna was in difficulty, it was like worse than their own death. They died in a certain sense. They had no more consciousness left, because Krishna was everything to them. But in that, they were thinking of Krishna, 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 Krishna. And that is a kind of ecstasy. Always focused on Krishna. If there is what's called Sai Bhava. Focused, fixed, or bhava, love of Krishna, is fixed regardless of what happens. That's what it means to be a devotee, captain. Regardless of what happens. Nalayana paraksave lakutastana bhivyati swaga prabhavina rakesu abhitoyabhidasam. Doesn't make a difference for a devotee, because he's whatever is going on externally, internally, he's just getting closer and closer to Krishna. This is actually what it means to be a devotee. It just takes deeper shelter, careful shelter. So everyone fainted. And then when Krishna came out, they regained their lives and they saw Krishna killed. So then, when they came back to the village where the cowherd men were staying, they were just singing. They told of all what they used to make into verses, all of Krishna's activities during the day. So as soon as they came back, they told their mothers, fathers, oh, Krishna killed Vajrasura, and then this big demon who was shaped like a crane attacked Krishna with his beaks, and Krishna killed him like that, and Krishna's so wonderful. Everyone was so amazed at the wonderful deeds that Krishna performed, but Mother Yasoda was in complete anxiety. She said, my dear boy, my dear Vatsa, why? You're the king's son. You don't have to go out and take care of the calves. You have so many servants. You don't have to do it yourself. That's so dangerous. You were attacked 2 times today. Vajrasura, this crane demon attacked you. You don't have to go out. And your feet are so tender. This is an old woman. The boys are just making up stories that I was attacked. Actually, some demon came and he got sick and fell over and he just made up, he just turned everything, and then this other thing happened, and this, and the ground is, wherever I walk, is as soft as everything is so soft. Don't worry, no, it's not actually true. There was any difficult report. You know, boys, they're just making up stories. They're playing imaginary games in their minds of all these dangerous things happening. But no, Mother, nothing's happening. Are you sure? Yes, Mother, don't worry. And then, right after that, Krishna decided he wanted to have a picnic. Because when he would go out with the calves, because calves, of course, need food, so the young calves, they have to come back. And also the boys, they can't go very, very far because they get hungry and they have to come back because they have to eat. So that's why Nanda Maharaj accepted that Krishna, and Yasoda accepted that Krishna could take care of the calves, because of course he would be gone for a little time, but he wouldn't be gone so far. It wasn't dangerous for him, even though he's so young. But anyway, Krishna was very, very independent. And when Krishna wanted to do something, he just did it. He had so many desires. He didn't like to be kept down. He had so many desires to play in all was based on exchanging rasa with his devotees and causing his devotees ecstasy as he played as he wanted to play. So at this time, he said, "My dear mother, I want to have a picnic today." Please make with all the boys, we want to play all day. Would you please make a lot of food? Please make so many different kinds of food that we can take and have our picnic. What do you think, Mother Yasoda? Do you think she was happy about that? What do you think? She wasn't happy at all. Why?
Because it will take longer for him to come back.
She wouldn't see him all day, and she wouldn't have the pleasure of feeding him. So, no. And Krishna said, yes. Mother, of course he never liked to disobey his mother. But still, he said, Mother, he was fixed in his determination. If you don't give me permission to go, I promise you, but in the name of God, that I'm going to go anyway. Can I go? So, she's always been, my boy is so restless and everything, but she said, okay, so please make me so much food. We want food so we can feed all the boys. And she made so many different kinds of foods, so many different kinds of milk products, and there's descriptions of all the food that she made. Pieces, so much milk and pieces of curd that were like mountains, little pieces, and it was, everything was compared to as beautiful as the natural, like the clouds and the sky and this all natural things, wonderful things that she cooked, and so much thick yogurt, and there was so much food that the boys took on their picnic, that all the boys were carrying
rod.
On one side there was food and, you know, some container and wrapped in cloth, and the cloth hanging on the rod, and then on the back side too, so it would be balanced. There would be that. And so the boys were all carrying this as they were walking along into the forest, and they had their flutes, and they had their sticks for herding the calves, and they had their buffalo horns, and Krishna was wearing a garland that was made. His mother, of course, they dressed them with so many ornaments and necklaces and jewels, and a beautiful turban with jewels on it. But Krishna preferred the decorations that the forest of Vrindavan offered more than he liked the jewels and gold and valuable ornaments that his mother used to dress him and servants used to dress him with every day. So as soon as the boys got out, they would take flower garlands and make good fresh garlands and gunja berry garlands. And they would, and Krishna's garland was going down to almost his feet. And he was playing his flute just at this time, just when Krishna was this age, he started playing his flute. And Krishna's flute playing pleased everyone in Vrindavan. He became expert very, very, very quickly at playing on his flute. And the elderly cowherd ladies, they would say to Krishna, "Oh, if you play your charming flute again, we will decorate your forehead and face with beautiful tilak markings." And then Krishna would play his flute, and everyone would be charmed by Krishna's flute. So Krishna would be going out to the forest to play his flute. Let's hear. from the beginning of this 12th chapter, of the day of the picnic. And just as they were going out, ready to go out, all the coward boys, Krishna Balaram, suddenly Jyotish Shiromani appeared, a great astrologer, and said that this is the time that we have to perform a sacrifice to make it auspicious and to propitiate, to satisfy the different planets. So Balaram stayed back to deal with the astrologer. So Krishna went to the forest without Balaram. So we always know that when Balaram doesn't go to the forest, something special is going to happen. And indeed, something special did happen. There are three occasions mentioned. I know of Krishna. Balaram didn't go to the forest, but Krishna went. And each time, Krishna had arranged this because he was going to do something that Balaram would never let happen. One time is, who knows one time?
On his Balaram's birthday, when he went to the Jumunas.
And what happened?
Well, the boys went in and they came frozen.
And then Krishna was going to. He jumped in the water, and Balaram would never let him jump in the water.
Mm.
Second time.
Balaram stole the cows.
Yeah. And this is third time. Oh, this is the same time, actually. No, third time.
Al-Hasur, when he was killed.
Huh?
Al-Hasur, when he was killed, Balaram wasn't there.
When?
Al-Hasur.
Ah. But this is that time only. This is that they were going to have a forest picnic and later on with Agasura. Okay, because Krishna was going to enter into the mouth of this Agasura. And Balaram would never allow him to do that because he would protect him. So that happened just before they were going to enter the forest. So we'll just start reading from Krishna book and then we'll read the same thing. Perhaps from the Bhagavatam. Once the Lord desired to go early in the morning with all his coward boyfriends to the forest. As soon as he got up from bed, he blew his buffalo horn bugle and called all his friends together. Called them each by their name. The bugle. And they started at keeping the calves before them. And there were so many calves. Each boy had so many calves, and Krishna had so many calves. And they all came out of their houses and they joined into like one big ocean of calves. So, keeping the calves before them, they started for the forest in a great procession. In this way, Lord Krishna assembled thousands of his boyfriends. They were each equipped with a stick, a flute, and a horn, as well as a lunch bag. And each of them was taking care of thousands of calves. And all the boys appeared very jolly and happy in that excursion. Each and every one of them, including Krishna, was attentive to his personal calves as he herded them in the different places in the forest. The boys were fully decorated with various kinds of golden ornaments. Yet out of their sporting tendencies, they began to pick up flowers, leaves, twigs, peacock feathers, and red clay from different places in the forest and further decorate themselves in different ways. So each of the boys would decorate. They all wanted to decorate Krishna. They would, just like we see the deities. There. Who is that? see how carefully the pujari has decorated the sunset. So similarly, the boys would take the different pigments, the different colors from the mint, from the clays in Braja, and they would take a soft twig. This caused a problem. What problem?
There's only one Krishna and so many boys.
So many boys. And how many of the boys wanted to decorate Krishna?
All of them.
And naturally, just like the pujaris, after they dress Krishna and decorate him, they think, I have done best. No one can decorate Krishna the way I decorate Krishna. Pujaris, because there's a reason for that, actually. A good spiritual reason is because when someone offers something to Krishna with devotion, that decorating, Krishna reveals to that devotee some of his beauty in reciprocation for his devotional offering. So the devotee sees Krishna in a more beautiful way because Krishna has revealed his beauty to the devotee. This is one of the wonders of deity worship. Now every day, if you dress the deities, every day you're amazed at how beautiful they look. More beautiful. You can't do that with a doll. It'd be very boring. So, how did Krishna solve this problem?
He had to make many Krishnas. As many Krishnas as boys.
See, this is what Krishna can do. He can satisfy everyone. Well, although we like to imagine ourselves as the central figure and want everyone to love us, we actually don't have the capacity to satisfy everyone. Practically, we don't have the capacity to satisfy anyone, but to speak of everyone. But Krishna, he has the capacity because he's unlimited. So he expands himself. In this case, there's so many boys, and all the boys have decorated Krishna so nice. Look how beautiful Krishna looks. So this is one of the, so there would be peacock feathers everywhere. So what season do the peacocks drop their feathers? They drop them in order, too. When do they start dropping their feathers?
Rain.
Huh?
Rainy season.
Rainy season. They start, and up to this time, when the rains come, dancing. So when the rains start finishing, and they're finishing their dancing too. So then, dancing gone, they start dropping their feathers. And by the time of that Radhastami comes, they're still dropping their feathers. They drop them in different orders. They have little top ones that are shaped like this. The little blue ones on top like that. They drop those last. They're rare to find. I remember when I first got to Vrindavan. We got there in September, yes. Mm-hmm. September 23rd or something like that. And then seeing peacock feathers everywhere. Like jewels. Because when you're in, what else do you? They have such a nice use. They're so beautiful. So the big ones get dropped first. The biggest feathers get dropped first. Long, long stems. Those feathers get dropped. And finally the little ones on the top of their heads get dropped. And they're all used for decorating Krishna. You can see his peacock feather there. We can see his peacock feather there. And we can see his peacock feather there. there's a peacock feather in the tail to the side.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, big one. So the boys will find peacock feathers and place it in Krishna's crown, his mukut. Then they would take flowers and they would make earrings, and Krishna would sometimes take one flower and put it on one side of his ear, or the other side, or one earring, or two earrings sometimes. Gunjaberry earrings, and they would be so, they would enjoy themselves so much dressing up in these ways. And then they began to pick up flowers, leaves, twigs, peacock feathers, and red clay from different places in the forest and further decorate themselves in different ways. And then they would start their, because boys don't only like to dress each other up, but they also like to sport and play in boyish ways. So they, while passing through the forest, one boy stole another boy's lunch package. And they would not only steal their lunch packages, but they would steal each other's flutes and horns and sticks, and someone would steal it, and then he'd run over, give me that back. I don't have it, because he'd pass it to someone else, and then he would try to find his lunch basket or something like that, and then he would start crying, and the boys would give it to him back, don't cry. And sometimes they would take food from their own, they would eat something from his lunch basket, and then take food from their own lunch baskets and put it in there, and then they would all be doing this to each other and laughing and crying. And Krishna would also cry sometimes when someone would steal his lunch basket. And they'd say, oh, don't worry, Krishna, we'll give it back. Because Krishna, when he's with his devotees, his consciousness becomes perfect. He adopts the mood that is perfect to reciprocate with his devotees' love. So even though he's the all-knowing, unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, his most endearing quality is that he reciprocates with the love of his devotees according to how much they love him and in the particular mood that they love him, he reciprocates. Explains this in the Bhagavad Gita, Nini Tamam, Papagate, Tamskutai, Lugatamam. He reciprocates with everyone perfectly. So what does that make you think? What do you think when you hear that?
Krishna's already got there in perfect, huh?
Yeah.
He's the person to serve.
Yeah. If I could just serve him a little more. Because sometimes I think that I'm not getting enough of the reciprocation. I'm not getting enough from Krishna. So as soon as I think like that, knowing that he reciprocates perfectly, that gives me some impetus. Well, if I just increase my devotion, then more satisfaction. So it rests on me. In that way, of course, Krishna, if we take one step to Krishna, Krishna takes so many towards us. So, when the boy whose lunch package was stolen came to know of it, he tried to take it back, but the boy who had it threw it to another boy, and this sportive play went on amongst the boys as childhood pastimes. When Lord Krishna went ahead to a distant place in order to see some specific scenery, because the Vrindavan forest was so happy that Krishna had come, the Vrindavan forest would always present newer and newer things for the pleasure of Krishna. Newer and newer things, and all the different, because forests they have their own beauty, especially Vrindavan, even more so, in different seasons. They each have a special gift and an offering. And you see, there's certain flowers that blossom in certain seasons, and each season has its own charm. The most fragrant flowers are there in the rainy season. What do they call it? Very, very, very fragrant flowers. Amazingly fragrant flowers.
Bakul?
Well, Bakul is there, but that's not what I was thinking. The dewy bay leaf that comes from these bushes. We used to have some. Right in front of the house one year. Incredible fragrant.
Hempikita.
Huh? That's the champak. Oh no, the sampakita, that's the Filipino name for it, yeah.
The double jasmine.
Yeah, so amazing flowers. Fragrant flowers come from Vrindavan, earth of Vrindavan. Even the roses that grow in Vrindavan have a special fragrance. Perth has good roses. Vrindavan roses. Better than good.
Best.
Best.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they flourish in winter there.
Huh?
They flourish in winter.
Which?
Roses in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's different to.
I think they have, in Vrindavan, they have two different seasons where they winter also. But the roses don't go in the beginning of the rainy season like these other fragrant ones. I think there's two seasons, right before winter, and then winter they come. But it's very hard for the tulsis to last in the winter in Vrindavan. The flowers you get this autumn are marigolds.
Tulsis don't survive the winter in Vrindavan.
Very often.
I don't know, because it's only in Perth you have to have a heat house or heating system.
Yeah, in Vrindavan. Even when they cover them, and even though the sun, the days are often warm, not warm, warm even, but the nights become very cold, not freezing, but very cold, and the tulsis don't. Don't survive. Each season has its own charm. Well, that was the point. And its own flowers, and the Vrindavan forest manifests sometimes all the seasons. What did it do? All the seasons, all the opulences of all the seasons, or some forests would be in different.
There's 10 forests. There's 6 seasonal forests. There's 3 forests that have 2 seasons. And there's 1 forest that has all the seasons.
Wow. Each season has own fragrances. How nice.
Suppose they're down in the west, like roses come out in springtime, and then summer you get the frangipani, and then winter you get the bulbs come out, like jonquils.
That's coming soon, right?
They're on the line, jonquils.
As soon as the solstice comes.
And jasmine comes just after, towards the end of winter.
Yeah. But different kinds of jasmines.
Yeah, different times.
Yeah.
And different bulbs come at different times also.
Yeah. Krishna had different forests that you could go to, from the winter forest to the rainy season forest.
Yeah, it's we had a limited version of material world. Limited edition.
Because all time serves Krishna, and here time crushes everything, changes everything. But there, time is the servant of Krishna. There's no past, present, and future. If it is here,
no destruction.
So then, so the Vrindavan forest, and this is the, there's the Vrinda Devi and all the associates, they, their job is to make the Vrindavan forest beautiful for Krishna, make facilities for Krishna's pastimes. So sometimes Krishna went ahead to a distant place in order to see some specific scenery. And that was too much for the boys. When Krishna would go ahead, he would disappear from amongst the mist, and he would, and the boys would run behind Krishna to catch him, because they could not tolerate a moment of separation from him. And he would say, the Bhagavatam says, "Aham Puravam, Aham Puravam, I want to be first to touch Krishna." They would touch Krishna, transcendental body that was such Ananda, eternities, listening to all of it, get so much ecstasy from that. And because they were so full of love, Krishna would get so much ecstasy from being touched by the boys. But they would all want to touch, be the first to touch Krishna there and then to touch Krishna. And we will stop. What questions? You want to add anything to this part of the pastime? Tomorrow we'll come on to, we'll see what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has said about this.
When Krishna came, Golok Vrindavan, all opulences of that place descended in this Vrindavan.
And Boma Vrindavan was no different from Golok Vrindavan.
And when he left, then all those things also left. The whole environment.
But for those devotees who have transcendental eyes, they don't see the Vrindavan with the plastic bags. They see that Vrindavan.
No. They are not here.
Huh?
They are not here. The consciousness is there. So we're seeing that,
yeah. But Vrindavan never becomes material.
To materialize it, it looks material.
But it never is material. And actually somewhere in the Krishna book Prabhupada says that Vrindavan is so powerful that even when a non-devotee comes to Vrindavan, he feels separation from Krishna. We know many people, there's some who came from the West to see their children. When the devotees were children and their parents were the adults. Now it's the devotees are the old ones. The older devotees. But their parents would come sometimes, you know, like to bring them home and things like that. They would have transcendental experiences just by being in Vrindavan. It is such a special place. Extraordinary. Intense, but extraordinary. Condensed. What do you think when the first time you went to Vrindavan? What did you think?
Mystical place.
Yeah. How long ago was that when you first?
Soon to New Zealand.
How many times have you been during those 17 years?
3 times.
Huh?
3 times. Particularly Govardhan is very mystical.
Huh?
Govardhan is very mystical.
Yeah. Even though there's so many, there's a thin covering, that's the way you look.
It was hard the first time, getting used to it. It's very dry and not very clean, and kind of hard to kind of get the feel of the spiritual world. I found the first time anyway.
Yeah.
You can have such a different experience. You know, one day you can walk in outside and think this is just the most dirtiest, roughest place. and another day to a very, very different experience of the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what's mysterious, but then you begin to see how much it's your consciousness.
Or it's Krishna reciprocating with your consciousness.
Yeah. One time somebody said, if you see Vrindavan and you see it's just dust and thorns and dry and not very attractive, it means that that's your heart. And when I heard that, I felt really embarrassed to go looking at things in that way.
It was 1986 when I met, and this could not happen today, but when we arrived, we met the head Pachari.
At Krishna Vrindavan.
Yeah. Something had been going on. He had some problem with Pachari's living. He just said, has anyone here got Brahman? And I just got from Brahman some months before. Like 20 years old, you know what it meant to be a Brahman. Has anyone here got Brahman? Put my hand up. Could you just come and do some service for the deity? The next thing I knew, I was doing the Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yeah.
I remember one time on the first day of Kartik when the head pujari came up to my room and said, could you go on the altar and put Krishna Balaram to sleep? And I did. He was making a point, so it was political. And so he chose three ladies to do something that they're not supposed to do, totally forbidden to do. And me and two other ladies who went on the
round. Who were the other ladies?
Satya, dressed.
Satya.
And maybe it was Rama Devi, I'm not sure who did Gaura Sahib of Krishna Dharma.
It was Rama Devi from Mayapur.
Yeah. And three of us went on the altar. Knowing full well that we weren't supposed to be there. Wonderful in there.
What was your first impression?
Sweet. I went there only for 2 days.
Monkey Prabhu, what was your first impression?
When I went to Vrindavan, it was very nice because it was a village.
Mm-hmm.
No paka roads. There was sand on the roads. And where our temple is now, that was too far, you know. At that time there was no temple when I went in. Here this Pogla ashram just sitting in Finnish.
Yeah, okay.
And it was really good environment when you go out on a parikrama. It's all sand and reeds and beautiful. It's not the same now anymore. Big buildings have come up. Tar roads have come up everywhere. Parikrama also you can drive now and fair way. So it's not many people at that time, now everybody's, you know, thousands and thousands of people coming with different motivations. So much commercial sort of environment has crept in. It wasn't like that, just a village. Even rickshaws were not available, you had to walk from one place to another. There was no other name. Sometimes there was a horse carriage, you know.
Tanga.
Tanga. They
yeah.
used to call it Tanga. But they have all disappeared, you know, horse carriages. Occasionally you can see one. They will load all the people and take them to Vrindavan, Sevakund, you know, to go at that time. But it's changed so much in these.
What was the mood
years.
Like when you went for darshan? Yeah? When you would go for darshan in the temple, what was the mood like?
Ah. The thing is that the temples were not so crowded at that time. Very few people will go, because there were not much transport. Maruti wasn't born at that time. The car Maruti wasn't born. So people didn't have any cars. And so there were not many people coming, thronging the place as they do now for picnics, for outing, for, you know, there are different motivations. So it was a village atmosphere. And even in the temples, there were not many people. Few people will be there. So it was a good environment in that sense.
What year was this?
What year?
Yeah.
Oh, of the 70s. 69, 70. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's 40 years ago.
Some of us weren't in the same bodies then.
Yeah, it could be.
Okay. So we shall continue tomorrow, Krishna willing. Here at the amazing festival of Krishna in the forest of Vrindavan. Also something so sweet. Vrindavan is the perfect stage. Once we pass time of day.